You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Simone Carney. Simone, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Simone, we're talking about your upcoming show at Guest that's opening September 20th of this year, 2025. And of course, we're talking on August 20th, a little early for that. So it's kind of fun to talk about what will be, since you know, that's always a little bit the case in these interviews. You know, you have to imagine what we're talking about in the audio, though there will be images here and links to Guest and your website. So tell me, in the upcoming show, I know you're also doing a reading, which we can discuss perhaps a little bit later in the interview, but what are you what are you showing in this? How would you kind of contextualize the work that you're presenting at Guest this September, late September, compared to your other recent work?
Sure. So the exhibition includes work that's part of an ongoing project of mine that involves hand-carved stone sculptures. I'm also preparing for a show in Tokyo at Koki Gallery in October. So both projects or both exhibitions are including works from this ongoing series. And the show at Guest will also include watercolors and rammed earth pedestals, as well as the small stone sculptures. And the sculptures they're on a spectrum from being kind of more specific and finished ones that feel more like fragments or semi-emergent forms, or even ones that are kind of hard to tell apart from mere like stone bits, to kind of more individually crafted or specific forms. But I wanted to de-emphasize the individually perfected autonomous sculpture and create more of a kind of field of relation. I'm setting up the sculptures in close proximity to one another. There's going to be 8 of them in total in the show, so that the stones kind of speak to each other a bit, and so that there's a kind of feeling of resonances between them. I encountered actually this essay by André Breton, the surrealist French poet, this summer, and he talks about how important it is, or what it means to listen to stones, and that if you kind of become attuned to them, you can kind of see how they call for each other, and once they're brought together, you can kind of catch them chattering to themselves. That essay just really resonates with me. I love thinking about how these materials can speak to each other. And for a long time, I've been interested in how particular objects and images, how the works that I create, they stand alone, but I'm really interested in the dialogues that they can have between each other, the conversations. So I see it more as a field than about a kind of set of individual sculptures.
Let's talk about that now, because I love the idea of a conversation between all of these things, right? To talk about like materials and how that's also a part of the conversation, right? What are the materials in this? Are you using alabaster? What are you constructing these out of?
Yeah, I'm mostly, for these, it's soapstone, alabaster, marble. I don't have limestone in the show, but I've worked with limestone. Let's see if there's anything else in the show. I think that's about it. So the stones are, it's all hand carved, so I don't work with kind of granite or stones that are too hard to carve by hand. And I've also got rhyolite. I love rhyolite.
What is rhyolite? I don't know what
that is. Rhyolite I was in the Southwest this summer and I saw a lot of it in Utah in the mountains. It's this some of it, it's like got these beautiful like orange and yellow striations. Sometimes it kind of looks like watercolor or it's like marbled. It's a very soft powdery stone. It's actually quite, it's full of silica, so it's kind of hard on the lungs. But I'm very, I love rhyolite. And so there's that kind of generally, there's, I think that's it in terms of the types of stones. And
then there's also watercolors, and you said rammed earth pedestals.
Oh yeah, so the stone sculptures are then, I made rammed earth pedestals on which I made, so there's going to be eight, there should be at least, this is what the plan is, there's going to be, I believe, eight stone sculptures, and then each, for each one of the stone sculptures, I made a rammed earth pedestal. I had this idea that I wanted to make rammed earth pedestals in mind, and I collaborated with the architect Arseny Pekarovsky, and I was in conversation with a colleague from Parsons, Derek Kafar, and I produced these rammed earth pedestals this summer. And so each one of those is going to be a place on which the stone sculptures will fit. And then there will also be then these watercolors, which will be in another room outside the main space of the gallery.
So the watercolors don't sound like they might have their own narrative then. I know they're likely all in conversation with one another, but do the watercolors have their own story to tell or narrative in relationship to the sculptural work?
Well, they were made at the same time as I was carving the stones, and I think part of it was, there's a beautiful dialogue I find that in terms of the experience of making, moving from something as like arduous and physically laborious as stone carving and slow. I could talk about, you know, a lot about what it is to like work with stone as opposed to another medium, but it's this very slow, hard material. And then to move between that and making the watercolors, which the way that I make them, there's a kind of immediacy and surprise that happens in the work in terms of their making. That for me, just it was a kind of spoke to different parts of me in terms of the process of their making. But in terms of what they describe, the watercolors are much more, they repeat the same form over and over again. It's a kind of oval that gets repeated in each one, and variations happen within that oval shape. But it's the same form that kind of is repeated, and variation happens inside of that repeated form, whereas for the sculptures, they're the rammed earth.
Wait, before you go into the rammed earth, because I want to talk about that, the watercolors. So this is, are they similar to the Eye of the Dove series that you made?
Yeah, the also called Waterstone. They're from that series.
I see. Okay. Yeah, and that's cut paper, right? You're cutting the watercolor into an oval shape, because that's such an unusual shape that does itself look like, as you're saying, kind of an eye.
Mm-hmm. In fact, it's maybe that's what it looks. Maybe I think the photograph might kind of take away some of that detail from the actual watercolor. But they're on. I don't cut it. In fact, it's on the watercolor on a white ground, the color of the watercolor paper itself. But there tends to be like a relatively sharp contour, so it might look cut. But what was I going to say about that? Yeah, it's this kind of oval that for me, this, and I could talk about this with the sculptures too, I'm kind of interested in these forms that are either kind of archetypal or that might seem kind of evocative and that could kind of hold a multiplicity of possible meanings. I mean, the oval is such a simple form, but it evokes, you know, the eye, the mouth, the stone, the womb, the all sorts of kind of things that it might call to mind, and I really love forms like that. That can kind of, that many meanings and associations can kind of cluster into or gather, that gather into themselves a whole range of possible meanings.
I like that too, and the rammed earth. Rammed earth is such a curious material. I don't know a lot about it. I know it's a construction material. It seems kind of amazing that it's, I always have a hard time understanding how it's, kind of doesn't fall apart, right? It's as strong as concrete or stronger, and it is just, as I understand it, compacted earth under pressure, creating a type of a building block, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and they are blocks. they're little off center. They're not squares. They're 6 inches high, these blocks, and like about 9 by 9.5 inches. But I do love, I'm creating a kind of, you know, it's the kind of way in which, say, like something like sedimentary stone is formed. It's through this act of gathering distinct particles and bringing them together and compressing them into a whole, like this beautiful part-to-whole relationship that I see in the rammed earth. And I love too that it speaks to the place that the stone comes from. I liked having, instead of having the stone just kind of propped on something that's more alien to it, like the wood pedestal, I liked having it sit on its own kind of origin, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a dialogue right there, really.
I put some of the dust that came from the sculptures as I was carving them. I put that into the earth blocks. And what else was I going to say about that? I think also I liked bringing earth into the gallery, but of course, like when you see the blocks, you can register that like a mold has shaped them. So there's kind of this conversation between made and unmade, like this thing that's assembled, that you see has been assembled, and you see the layers. And the show itself is called Digs, D-I-G-S, all capitalized. So kind of with the kind of idea of excavation and sedimentation in mind, I kind of think of these sculptures of bits from the archaeological site of the psyche or something like that, and that these kind of these bits of stone or unearthed bits are sitting on these layers of earth that they might have emerged from. And I feel like emergence is something that's happening in the stone, because, you know, some of them are really finished and some of them are, again, just raw material. So there's this kind of, hopefully one can register a kind of movement happening. That kind of spectrum is more emphasized in the Japan show, where I plan to include more sculptures than the 8, if all goes according to plan. You can really register that kind of fluctuation of between more formed and more formless in the more sculptures you see together. But I wanted to call the show Digs because I wanted to capitalize the title Digs, because I like this relationship that happens in language, at least when the word is capitalized. You start to, like, the letters get in the way of the word almost. You kind of see the letters of D-I-G-S, and it kind of starts to make you think about the letters, or you have to kind of register the fact of the language itself, as much as you think about what digs points to. It points to, you know, this meaning or that meaning. I don't know if that makes sense, but for me,
it does
that
make
happens.
Sense. Yeah, I love hearing you talk about that. What you're saying, but for you, that's how it comes together, right? Those are all important aspects of the dialogue.
Yeah, I think that's what's happening in the sculptures too. Is hopefully there's this kind of, you register the stoniness of the stone, but also you feel what it's pointing to, or what it's kind of holding, the form, what it's describing. I kind of think of the sculptures as maybe, you know, the way that I make them, it's, I have this kind of flood of, like, an inventory of images and forms and kind of that are generally kind of archetypal in form, a lot of them. And I kind of think of them more as archetypes, like the pieces in the show are like ghosts and hands and I think there might be a bird, but there are birds in other sculptures that I make. Like, I'm often making birds and bowls and eyes and other kind of animals and things like that. And I feel like it's not just the symbol, which is, you know, they could be seen as symbols, like they're kind of, I describe them a bit, they're kind of more abstracted forms or semi-abstracted forms. But the symbol for me, like, points to something away from itself, whereas maybe the way I understand archetype is that it kind of holds the meaning in itself too. And like, I'm interested in what happens when I, like, describe the ghost a bit more specifically, like, what happens when it meets the stone? You know, what happens when ghost meets stone? Just like what happens when the letters digs meets the meaning digs or something like that. It's like this play between meaning and materiality, between body and mind, between imagination and material. I don't know where I was going with that, but I have a lot to say about
I like that. Yeah, I like where you're going with that. I mean, just that kind of exploration. I want to ask you about your writing too, mm-hmm. because I know you're doing a reading there, and of course you are a writer and a poet, mm-hmm. and which I know of through, of course, this, but also we did an interview once before in 2019, mm-hmm. right? So, mm-hmm. And a lot's changed since then, I would imagine. So what are you planning for the reading? I know it isn't all planned out yet, but I'd love to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm going to be reading probably. I haven't fully decided, but I'm probably going to be reading from this book that came out last year with ITI Press. And it's a book that I did in collaboration with the photographer Hannah Whitaker, and it was designed by Alana Schlenker, and it's this wonderful press that I love that is situated, it's part of the MFA on, I think it's Image and Text MFA at Cornell. It's a press that's associated with that program. But it's a book that is an artist book and a book of my poetry. It took selections from this longer manuscript of mine, and it paired it with photographs of other stone sculptures that I've made, and the text itself is it's very, in some sense, it has its own kind of sculptural quality, and this was emphasized even more by how Alana kind of arranged the text on the page. Also, the whole book has a beautiful materiality because it was printed on a risograph. But the text is kind of punctuated by spaces that rupture the kind of otherwise what would be just a plain, you know, linear format of the text, but like these spaces and gaps and what I think of as like holes or voids start to break the language apart and break the text apart. And then time does that too. So I have these numbers which indicate time that also perforate the text and start to jar what I don't know. It's not really a narrative, but it's a kind of the text. And so I think this is a hard text to read, actually. So I might even like project it as I'm reading it because it is so visual. But it's a text that I think the poetry itself has a kind of like plays with materiality and all that actually can't be circumscribed in words. And I think it's, you know, if I could say things clearly, I think I wouldn't be a poet. I think it's because I wrestle with how to say a thing and with all that seems to elude and evade articulation, that I think poetry is a home for that. It kind of accommodates what's hard to articulate or what's outside of kind of too easily like two-dimensional time and space. It kind of gives it space it kind of allows for other dimensions. And so in any case,
that gives us something to kind of imagine, because of course it's a visual presentation as much as it is a presentation of the reading in itself.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So I wish I could show you what that is, but if you come on September 20th, I'm going to be reading with David Gorin, the poet, and I'm trying to remember who the other poet is going to be, but there's going to be two readers alongside me, and so I hope it will be a really, really fun event.
I hope so too, and I hope the listeners can also attend that at Guest, which is in Brooklyn. And I want to ask you one more question before we go, a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
Well, I always have so many books beside my bed. But one book that I'm reading is the Notes from the Woodshed by Jack Whitton. It's his writings. And I loved his show at the MoMA. I thought it was one of the best shows I've seen in so long. And I picked up his book after my friend Jarrett Ernest, who wrote a review of that show in the LA Review of Books, a beautiful review. He told me about the book, and I got it. And I love not only Whitton's thought, but also how he there's all these kind of various formats over the years that he finds to write. It's like sometimes it's these all cap fragments, or there's different ways in which you see his mind finding a way to make language. It almost kind of is a little sculptural or something, but there's something so exciting about seeing the different ways that he speaks his mind. And it's a big book, but it's just so so alive, just like his mind is. I loved that show so much for so many reasons, but it was just, I felt like there was just this really living mind just living, like playing itself out through material and through image. I'm also rereading this, I was I was rereading Night Philosophy by Fanny Howe, who was a good friend and family friend of dear one, and who just passed away. She's an amazing poet and novelist and mind. And her essay on bewilderment specifically is one that she really understands, for me, she speaks to kind of, not just, she talks about kind of an ethics of bewilderment, but also how she articulates how experience is so, life is so kind of non-sequential and scattered, and yet language forces a kind of, well, not forces, because it's not coercive, but it demands in some sense, and allows for us to kind of order what is otherwise scattered and dispersed into a kind of sequence, and a linear sequence specifically with language, and how beautiful that is, but also how troubling it can be too, because life just isn't that way. It doesn't have such a clean and clear before, middle, and after. It's all over the place in many ways. And so how do we deal with that in language? And anyway, it's a beautiful essay and book. So it's been special to revisit that, given the very sad fact of her passing.
Yeah, I'm so, so yeah. Sorry to hear that she has passed. My condolences to you on that, of course, and all those who will miss her and loved her. I want to thank you so much for talking with me today, Simone. It's been a pleasure for the second time. The link is also here to your other interview for listeners who are interested. But again, Simone, thank you so much for talking with me today and for your upcoming show.
Thanks so much, Brainerd. And just because I didn't want to forget the name of this other reader at the event, it's Zoe Hitzig. So I didn't want to forget her name.
Okay, Zoe Hitzig. Yeah, it's in there. Yeah. Thank you so much, Simone.
Thank you so much, Brainerd. It was such a pleasure.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.